your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Donna Adelson, there's a lot to break down. And today we got Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, with us to do just that. And there's been so many things in this trial. This has been a trial that's totally been about behavior. So let's start with the moment that cracked the case wide open. April 19th, 2016, the undercover bump operation, where an agent dropped a flyer into Donna Adelson's lap, implying someone knew about the hit on Dan Markell. Now, if you know nothing about what's going on, you would be, what is this weird piece of paper? Is this like a hit? Is this like a club event tonight? Is the Fitty set going to be in the club? That I'm an old woman. This is not for me. No, this is very specific about that hit. And she seems to know something about it. So much so that just 22 minutes later, she's on the phone with her son, Charlie. Not a shred of panic in her voice, no confusion, no instinct to call her husband or an attorney, just straight to Charlie. That behavior is a little bit suspicious. It seems a little calculated. And when you line it up here with Robin's world of behavioral pattern analysis, what Donna didn't say might be louder than anything she actually did say. So we're going to dig into this right now. Robin, let's start with all this. What behavioral red flags go up for you when someone receives a threatening message and immediately makes a controlled, almost business-like call, not to law enforcement, but to the very family member that is implied to be part in this mini cabal of taking out the ex-son-in-law?
Yeah, so when we're looking at human behavior, what we're always doing is we're looking at, as I've said so many times in my life now, that arc, you know, and we're looking at arcs. We're looking at what is normally this person doing every single day, every single moment, because when we start seeing a deviation, that means something's changed. In other words, what we're doing is, it's interesting, we're actually administering our own polygraph exam the way that we're doing this, because what polygraph exams do is they are measuring physiological responses to stimulus. And what they're doing is, so when an interviewer asks a question, they're looking at their machine to see if that question's got a response in their biology somehow. Did they stress? Did their breathing rate change? Did their respiration change? Did their perspiration change? All these things change. And so when we're looking at the way you and I do, we look at these behaviors, we are basically doing our own polygraph. Not a polygraph is that we're trying to detect deception, because what polygraphs do is they detect change. And so in this case, what we saw was when this thing is dropped on her lap and the conversation happens, the bump, and I've done bumps. These are fun, actually. because you're curious. You know, you do a bump because you're curious. I read the backstory. Again, I'm kind of digressing, I know.
Yeah, no, you're great.
I read the backstory about why they need to do this because the line wasn't getting a lot of action. And so when an over here isn't getting a lot of action, you're trying to make sure that the line is good, that you were actually up on it. And also, is there anything going to be useful here? Because what happens, so here's the administrative backstory of it. Mm-hmm. If a line isn't getting any action and you have to renew these things on a US person, like every 90 days or sometimes 60 days during investigations, which is a lot of paperwork. If you can substantiate to the judge how this intrusive technique is benefiting the case, then they have to shut it down. So they have to do something to generate something on this line in order to justify it staying up. Again, I don't know if this is the particulars of this, but that's in general. And so it's exciting to see what response are we going to get. And you're anticipating a response. But what also happens is if you don't get a response like you're anticipating, that's also very telling. And that's what we have here. So yes, she called her son, but let's look at her demeanor of like how she interacts with everyone every single day. Mm-hmm. That confidence, that seemingly control of her environment, non-emotionally crazy. And so that's what we saw here. The fact that she gets bumped and she gets interacted with by another human being that drops potentially a bombshell of information on your lap or has a conversation with you, this should trigger a physiological response of, oh my gosh, what's this? Change. Mm-hmm. But what we had was we had almost no effect. Mm-hmm. We had calling the sun, which is a data point, but her behavior when she called the son is what I'm looking at. Did she freak out? Was she exasperated? Or did she normally act like she normally does during the conversation, the dialogue, the tempo, all these different things with the interaction? And the fact that she maintained a pretty baseline of the way she's interacting says the information did not shock her.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, she knew. She knew there was no what flyer. Who could have done this? Is this something you're involved with, Charlie? Is this one of your friends on the playground? Oh, wait, you're 38 years old and I still pay your bills.
It should have been, in other words, well, here's what you should have had. You should have had confusion.
Yeah.
If she knew nothing,
there would have been, what is this about?
Right. It'd be confusion. Yeah. It would make no sense. So if you had zero knowledge of this information until this point, it would be confusing. I don't necessarily zero in on who she calls or doesn't call. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a data point for the entire investigation, because if she does have a closer relationship with her son, she's going to call her son. If she thinks her husband's a moron, again, these are data points we really don't know in this moment.
Yeah.
You know, that this happened potentially. But again, I'm looking at her actual response to the information that should have been a shock to her. It should have been different than what she's aware of. And the fact that it wasn't that says that this information that's laid out to her was not surprising to her. So in other words, there's knowledge. And that's, I think, what they're testing.
What do you think they knew about Donna at the point of the bump? So prior to going into this, were they still trying to figure out how interconnected she was with this? And this was going to give them that next building block to confirm on the arc of her behavior? Were they expecting the reaction that they got? Or were they still kind of iffy before all this took place on, you know, what does mom know about this?
Yeah, again, I don't know them from that standpoint, but what I'd be curious as if I was the investigator kind of coming in a little cold because I don't know what they knew at the time, mm-hmm. but I would be looking at that. I'd be doing this because I'm really deeply curious. Mm-hmm. I'd have suspicions based on interviews and interactions and watching this whole family dynamic that she was involved in some way. Mm-hmm. And since so many people in that family seemed to be deferential in some way, or what I think is the greatest motivator she has here is she used fear as her motivator. People were fearful of going against her and rationalizing around she's just a compassionate, caring person. And as her daughter said on the stand, I don't believe you can care too much. That was an interesting statement by me, but we'll get back to that in a few minutes.
Go ahead.
But for Donna, it was, I think the investigative team was testing a theory about her knowledge of what was going on. And so it got validated.
Yeah. There are so many things with that bump that really, you know, are adding up here in court. One of the big things, one of the cause and effects here, bump happens. What happens or what stops, what changes immediately after? Well, those checks, those 44 checks she's already written to Catherine McBonough, the go-between Charlie and the hitman, those end as soon as that bump happens, because suddenly Donna has some awareness that maybe somebody on the outside is watching. That seems to be a pretty big tell as well, doesn't it?
Behavior change.
Yeah.
I mean, so again, you take an action to register and record what behavior changes take place, and then you try to understand what would cause that person to change that behavior. Mm-hmm. And so culpability, knowledge, all those things. You know, I think the greatest thing that's helping this case is the fact that she's an idiot. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's, you know, we've covered this, you know, whether it's a Koberger case where people kept saying, oh, he's so smart. No, he's an idiot too. Mm-hmm. People that tend to be criminals, you know, the whole notion of criminal mastermind really doesn't go hand in hand with very many people, because if they were masterminds, they wouldn't be criminals. And so she's one of them. And mm-hmm. she's so archaic in her thought process that I think she's watching like Bugs Bunny or something growing up and looking how Bugs Bunny did something. And so if Bugs Bunny got away with it, so can I. I mean, it's because again, her methodology, and they even said it in the courtroom, you know, actually not a courtroom. Stacey, who's your other guest? Stacey, right?
Stacey, yeah.
Stacey was saying that she can imagine her butt dialing people by accident on her iPhone. She's mm-hmm. not smart enough to use an Android. I thought those were pretty funny.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I think she is just so rudimentary in her understanding of law and investigations from watching like MacGyver or something that she's just an idiot. And so people keep overthinking criminals. She
yeah.
is a complete moron, and she is running in her own mind a criminal enterprise to take down the son-in-law, thinking that she's the smartest person in the room. And mm-hmm. why? Because everyone in her family, her echo chamber, for all these years to placate mom, have told her she's the smartest person in the room.
And that's an interesting thought experiment right there, that they think she's the smartest person in the room. Do they really think, or was it more, we're going to act like she's the smartest person in the room because the wrath of her, if we make her feel like she's not, is not worth going down that road. I mean, this is the woman who literally, I think Bugs Bunny is a great metaphor here, laundered money in a washing machine. She threw a Tide Pod in. I mean,
you can imagine the episode with Rocky and this yes. cohort. You know, if I was this, you know, would I throw, you know, my friend Rocky in the oven, you know, and throw the match in yeah. the oven? And I mean, it just,
it's cartoonish. It's like you expect there's a big box of TNT next to the washing machine as well, and it's accidentally going to go up, and the Roadrunner mm-hmm. runs through Donna's house. Meet me.
Yeah. yeah.
And then and she's sitting there with all the money burning around her and her face is black.
I know, it's my FBI scientific way of explaining things.
But it is. But it is. It's so comical, the fact that she did this. And I'm, you know, Charlie even answered when Catherine called and said, why is the money in this bag wet and molding? Mom put it in the washing machine and stapled it together, too, of all things. It's just, okay, this is her thinking. This is literally Donna on her own, Charlie saying, you know, we got to launder the money. I need that money. And she thinks her next step is to put it in there with some scent beads and press spin cycle. And this is the best way to get the money, and then shows up with it as if this is, I mean, at first I'm like, does that show dementia? I don't think it does. I mean, this just shows how stupid she is.
Or she's hyper OCD.
Yeah.
And germaphobe. I mean, so again, I guessing at why people do things,
yeah.
you know, it's challenging. It fits a fun narrative. There is no doubt.
But she pulled it from their safe.
Yeah, I know. Do I think that she did it because she didn't really understand the concept of money laundering? Yeah. It maybe. I mean, it's... I don't want to sound like an idiot if I agree, but at the same time, it fits, you know, from what I think about her as a human being.
But
this goes to, I think, a question a lot of people have, and that is, so why did these seemingly smart kids, I mean, her kids have done amazing things in their lives or their careers and things mm-hmm. like that. How can such a a highly functional group of people in society that are mm-hmm. that are profiting pretty well by the employment they've chosen as a line of work,
yeah.
how can they be so susceptible to a seeming moron? And I think it comes down to, again, pure conjecture from yeah. the limited data points from the outside, is that they all got into a pattern of behavior with her from a very mm-hmm. young age, that this is the way mom does things, this is the way, and she probably used, because we've seen this, again, reverse that optic, because we've seen it in our own households, hopefully, if you have a loving and caring parent, but not to an extreme where I'm only doing this because I love you. I do this mm-hmm. because I care about you. And I'm really focusing on that, Tony, because that one line that the daughter used, what's the daughter's name again?
Wendy,
that Wendy used was, on the stand, Wendy said, "I don't think you can care too much." So listen to this. So when I heard that, it's like, oh, she's got a lifetime of reps with the mother of rationalizing away her destructive behavior. It's just her caring too much. When mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with caring too much. And so what I think happened here is her mother, Donna, kept making excuses for bad behavior throughout her life when it popped up of, it's just because I care. It's just because I care. Mm-hmm. And here's where I think the family, people are saying it seems to be fracturing. The family seems to be slowly yeah. turning against her. And here's my theory as to why. They've been told a lie their entire life, that she's done everything she's done for them mm-hmm. their entire lives because she cares so much. But when push came to shove, everyone's getting thrown under the bus except Donna.
Yeah.
If she was a mother that cared too much, she'd be taking the heat.
Yeah. She'd be protecting.
She'd be protecting everyone if she cared too much. And so when, again, place yourself in a family situation behind the scenes, the conversations that might be going on mm-hmm. with the one so-called estranged son that seemed to keep his wits about him is now been, he's been probably poking at that saying, she's full of shit his entire life. And they said, mm-hmm. no, that's mom. But now it's probably starting to ring true, because why isn't mom protecting us?
Yeah.
Why isn't she taking the fall? Why isn't she just being honest that she taught us to do our entire life? Because she probably said numerous times, well, I'm just being honest when I'm telling you such and such and such and such. I'm just being this. And so for the first time, she's having to eat her own words, because her own words are coming back to haunt her about caring too much. I'm just being honest. I'm just being forthright. All the things that narcissists say to try to control their environment, it's now seen the light of day. And I think that's why it's fracturing. Boy, what a long monologue. I'm probably.
Well, and she can't play this, her double role anymore. She can't play the role of, I care about you kids so much and everything I'm doing for you, and then play the public role of, I know nothing about any of this, because the kids know she knows about what's going on. Charlie right. certainly does. Wendy, I guess, is questionable because she's never been charged with anything. Certainly the actions that we're learning about what Wendy did or the suspicious weird ways that she planned her days leading up to this murder seem to suggest some sort of knowledge in some way, shape, or form. But it also very much shows mom's not acting in our best interest. Like you said, yeah. mom is acting for herself. If mom was acting in our best interest, mom would have just said, I'm going down. Let's not go to trial. Let's not dig this stuff up where it could incriminate you, which it very looks like it is. It looks like Wendy could be next after this trial. Possibly Harvey as well. If she just shut up and said, I'm going down for it, I did this, game over. But no, it's, let's try and subpoena my daughter. Then her attorneys had to say, no, you're not subpoenaing her, because that will take away her rights over here of not being, what word am I looking for, of immunity, that's the limited mm-hmm. immunity that she has. And they're blaming it all on Charlie. There's nothing here in this anymore where Charlie had nothing to do with it. It's Charlie's the mastermind. He did it all. And he's going for an appeal. So again, everything pointing back, Donna is protecting herself. Everyone else be damned, it seems. And I wonder, did we get there because the kids finally gave up talking to her? Wendy says she hasn't talked to her since 23. Charlie, who knows how that's going? He's in prison. I think all you had left really was Harvey that was, you know, with her while she was not incarcerated when they tried to escape to Vietnam. But is this Donna's revenge at the end of the day where, look, all the kids have abandoned me, so I'm going to throw them under the bus too?
Yeah. Revenge is an interesting word. Potentially revenge. I wouldn't have used that word revenge because revenge means you care about getting at someone. I think she just cares about her own survival.
Okay.
But I think it might be that only because when I was watching the video of her in the courtroom and I'm watching her eyes, oh my God, she's got daggers. You know, yeah. When the FBI agent was on the stand testifying about the bump, boy, you could see the hatred seething out of her because she was made to look a fool. Mm-hmm. I think that's her whole thing. She's all about that image.
Yeah, I'm narcissist.
Look at the lines of work she put her children into, you know, because that's about image. Everything's about managing what the world sees when they see you. And her image was being exposed as being an idiot by that FBI agent doing a bump, and she's completely unaware of it. And so every time someone got up there and is poking at her and her cognitive ability, her thoughtfulness, she's got dagger eyes coming out. So it could be vengeful. Well, obviously it has to be vengeful because if she's tied into going after the, you know, ex-son-in-law, that's vengeful act. So yeah. We'll put her in the vengeful area, no doubt.
What did you make? It's been interesting, very interesting watching her reactions. I thought there was something interesting to note in the last handful of days. Obviously, it depends when you're watching this or listening to this. But the detective that was on this, that helped arrange the bump, that helped put a lot of this stuff together, who was one of the leads on all this, he was up there testifying and just breaking down all of the inconsistencies in Donna's story, how the bump went, how she said this, how she said that, all the things that point to her having knowledge of what was going down. Right. Her demeanor in court, it was different than that of the family members. It was different than how she was acting when Wendy was up there, when Robert was up there, when pretty much anybody else was up there, when the authority figure was up there delivering the dishes. She was acting like she was just, it was too hard to keep her eyes open. It was just, she was going to fall asleep. I found that interesting because just from experience with narcissists in life, whenever push comes to shove and the spotlight is shining on you directly and you can't get away from it, and she can't, she's sitting in a courtroom in a chair, everything is going right at her. They tend to get sick. They tend to be tired. They tend to be ill. I got to get, they flee. They get out of the situation because it's kryptonite that's coming at them. And in real time, we were watching Donna, I feel, doing that, becoming mentally disconnected in that courtroom because I don't think she could process the information that was coming at her, that somebody had called her bluff.
Yeah, it's a massive blocking behavior. Everyone's blocking behaviors manifest differently, and we saw massive blocking behaviors from her because what's being assaulted is her own identity of how she identifies herself. Mm-hmm. You know, as we said before, Robert Greene's great book, Laws of Human Nature, is we only consume information that validates our own self-opinion. Mm-hmm. If someone starts assaulting the opinion we have of ourselves, our beliefs, our systems, and everything in life, we start shutting down. We start withdrawing. We start negating it. We start battling it. And so all she's been facing the entire time is her entire system of her echo chamber is falling down. That's also why the children are having a hard time coming around this as well, is that their understanding of the world and how it operated with her and her role in it, that was their self-opinion of who they were as children, who they were as a family. And so it's hard to break those things down. And so the eldest son is the loving critic, and her behavior itself is what started shattering that image. Can you imagine? So here's a fun thought experiment. if she had owned any part of her role in what happened, mm-hmm. and was up there on the stand taking culpability for any aspect of this, you'd see family members rallying around her.
Yeah.
Because there's mom doing the mom thing. She's up there not being mom. She's up there being narcissistic Donna.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of shocked them.
I agree. There's a lot of code language in here that her doppelganger attorney, I'm sure, is going to try and argue of saying, oh, well, it was just that. The birthday gift, the birthday, planning on Harvey's birthday. And wanting to talk to Charlie specifically about, you know, what was coming up right. on this, and then needing him to erase this text because she couldn't talk to him while she was in the vehicle with Harvey. She had to have this private conversation. Now, one could argue, well, if you're planning a birthday party and the person that you're having a party for is sitting next to you, yeah, okay, go have the conversation privately. But it obviously seemed a little more iffy than that, considering when Harvey did have his birthday, there was a line given to him from one of them saying, oh, and by the way, the birthday gift is you're going to get your grandkids back soon. Interesting birthday gift. That gift seems to be the operative line here. You know, Wendy got a TV, Harvey's getting the grandkids, and nobody's speaking about that Dan Markell suddenly is going to be dead soon, or is dead, depending on when the event takes place. But let's talk about that a little bit. The erase this text line and the code language that they put into these text messages, thinking they're smarter than anybody who's going to look at it. Is it that, or do they think nobody's ever going to look at this stuff?
I'm sorry. I just keep laughing because I got images of Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam in my head. I just can't stop.
Bugs Bunny's texting Donna Adelson. That'd be great. I think we can maybe do that in one of the graphics.
I think she's more like Elmer Fudd. I mean, yeah. it's just her stupidity. I don't think it's any more complex. Again, if you're trying to equate criminal mastermind to Donald Adelson, no, it's not. It's not complex. She's not a complex person. She's a pretty basic person, a pretty basic control narcissist. I think it's just, I mean, how many times, you know, she's like a 5-year-old, you know, because the other image that's popping in my mind is, you know, for a little toddler, remember, if you can't see me, it means you can't, I can't, if I can't see you, you can't see me.
Yeah.
If I say, if you know, we have to erase this so no one knows about it, that means that you must not know about it. I mean, the logic is so flawed. And also, until you've experienced and have done a deep dive on what investigators actually do, you kind of live in disbelief that that's actually what they do. Mm-hmm. You see it in the movies that they'll you know, do these things and find out this information. But you know, who's really going to pay attention? It's me. So I think there's a lot of disbelief going on in her own mind of what the reality of this is. Hey, they're probably only spot checking if they're listening in. You know, they're going to miss this. This will gloss over because we're going to make it sound like a regular conversation. And I'll throw this in here so they won't be paying attention. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works. We listen to everything. I mean, I've sat on wires. They're the most excruciating, long, boring things you have to sit on, because what you have to do when you're sitting a wire is if the judge says, all right, I'm going to allow you to intrude in someone's privacy, what you have to do is you have to actually do due diligence that, hey, if I got the authority to listen in on everything in your life, I also have to go through and what's called redact things that are not pertinent to the case. And so in order to do that, I'm not allowed to capture information that's not pertinent to that case. And so you actually have an agent always assigned to listen to everything on that line. And I mean, we're talking everything. You sit and listen to that line for hours and hours and hours, as long as that lines up, because you have to go through it and you have to verify to the judge in the court that this was pertinent to the case, this wasn't pertinent to the case. And so absolutely everything is listened to and captured. And so I think that's not what people understand when there's an overhear, and this includes, you know, just things in the prisons, in jails. Everything's being listened to, because if it's being captured, in order for it to be legally be captured so it can be segregated into relevant and non-relevant, everything's listened to.
Mm-hmm. And she seemed to be clueless about that, even after Charlie was in prison. I mean, the prison phone calls are questionable. Those are coming into play.
I mean, think about it. I mean, you and I get to talk about things that go on behind the scenes of what actually goes on, but not a lot of people see. I mean, do you ever see that on Criminal Minds, that actually you got an agent sitting in a room by himself, you know, for 24 hours a day working shifts just to listen to a line that says nothing 90% of the time, you know, only to get like 5 seconds of this kind of stuff. So that's exactly what goes on behind the scenes.
True. I mean, I guess, you know, we deal with it every day, so we hear it. We know how this stuff functions. Right. But the thing is, we're in a world today, though, where if you wanted to find any of this out, you could find it out. Like, it's not difficult to get this in. Just Google what happens here. You know, you'd find us talking about it. You'd find plenty of people talking about it. But that goes to the narcissism of Donna, where she already knows everything. She doesn't need to be told anything, because whatever baseline of information she operates on, from whatever era it's from, and from whatever, you know, lack of information she drew it from, that's what it is. Because in her mind, that's Donna's way of thinking. And yeah,
and you can see her lack of intelligence on this too, because we've seen this in so many cases. Whether you're watching it in the movies do it the same way as real life. The more people that know about something, the higher the probability it's going to be found out. Mm-hmm. And she blew that completely out of the water right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Involved way too many people. I mean, you know, so using intermediaries, multiple intermediaries, ways you're going to pay checks, multiple. I mean, it's not even just one payment. We're talking multiple payments. So like every time you take one action is one more chance for someone to discover it. Mm-hmm. That's just common sense. Which she completely lacks. She has zero common sense. I think she heard about the ability to take someone out and said, I know this better than I've ever seen in any movie. I know it better than anything I could ever research, because I'm Donna and you all are idiots. I got this figured out. Let me do it my way. And boom.
She did it her way. Yeah. You said earlier, you know, she acts like a 5-year-old. I agree, but I think she, in many ways, she still views Charlie as a 5-year-old. And I think a lot of her children she views as 5-year-olds. Or is it something else? Because there's clearly, I'm curious to get your take on her relationship with Charlie. It's unhealthy. It's a mesh. I'm not saying it goes all the way to like Norman Batesy, like, you know, there's some hanky-panky going on here or something late at night. But there's certainly emotional. This is a term I heard last night, and I found it interesting. And I don't know if it applies here, emotional incest, where the roles that Charlie seemed to be playing for Donna were almost that of what Harvey you would think would be playing.
Codependent relationship.
Charlie, yeah, very, very codependent in ways that a partner should have been, not your son.
Yeah.
And, again, it goes so far, but I don't think it goes to like sexual. As dark and weird as that corner of the universe would be, we don't see any signs of that.
No,
but certainly unhealthy. I don't think that she's aware of it. I don't think Charlie was aware of it. When we're learning more and more about just how close she was to her son, who's near 40 or was 40 at the time. You know, she's paying his bills still, managing just basic stuff of his life that he should have figured out when he was 18. Yet Don is still doing it while, you know, supposedly being the mastermind of this murder. Speak to that relationship, and what's from a behavioral standpoint do you pick up on there?
So let's go to the basics of human beings. We all want to feel safe.
Yeah.
And so they made each other feel safe. Literally, it's nothing more complex than that. It is definitely, from my optic, a codependent relationship. And so they're both enabling each other. Mm-hmm. And anytime she probably came up with an idea, thought, or something, he was very responsive to her, probably at a young age, because again, this is a lifetime of reps. And so when Donna would say something, when mom said something to me, Charlie was probably, out of all the kids, the most responsive to the things that she said.
Yeah.
He was probably a rule follower. He was probably someone that didn't buck the system, didn't challenge her in any ways, which made her feel very good. So there's going to be a bond that she has because she likes him best, because he's the one that listens to me. And from his point of view, she's the one that's giving me attention, because all it is rules. I don't understand why no one else is paying attention to rules. Again, pure conjecture because we don't know, but that's how these things start, is that they both were giving each other exactly what they needed for their entire lifetimes. And so when you're faced with challenges, when you're faced with things to do in life, you're going to revert to your training.
Mm-hmm.
You're trained that here's my son. This is the one I'm closest to. This is the one that listens to me. Everyone else either ignores me, challenges me, or doesn't do the things at the same tempo I want them to do it at. He is probably very responsive to her his entire life. And so he's now he has reps. He's got behavior patterns of constantly doing that with her. And so when mom comes up with this idea of doing X, Y, and Z, he's like, all right, this is what mom says. You know, I'll make it happen, because he's been in the role of making things happen for her his entire life, because she only does it because she cares so deeply.
Exactly. I was just doing this. I was just doing that. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, all conjecture, but it feels like, from what we've seen, and we know very little about Harvey. I think the little we've ever heard from him was on the airport video where they're getting arrested and hear him in the background, wah, 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 which always to me felt like a Peanuts character or something in the background.
Well, I'm curious, and I'm so sorry to interrupt, Tony. So what do we think about him? So it's interesting. So anytime you have a codependent relationship here, you know, where you have an adult, a parent, and a child, a lot of times that is spurred on by something really unhealthy going on in that family. A lot of times it's spurred on by alcoholism by one of the other parents, or some sort of overuse, abuse, or something mm-hmm. that causes the one adult to gravitate towards a child and put that child in the parent role rather than the actual elder adult, like the husband. So mm-hmm. I'm just, again, who knows, because I have no data on it, but generally when we're seeing codependent relationships, they're sparked because of that. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that he seems incoherent or doesn't speak much, I wonder what's going on with him that created the relationship where she went to the son and not to him.
Well, oftentimes when you see very, very narcissistic individuals to the point like Donna is, you find the partner to be very passive. It's usually the opposite. Mm-hmm. And that partner needs that. And it works to a certain extent. One's usually fairly miserable and just kind of provides. And the other one takes everything emotionally. Right. But if Harvey has been emotionally absent, again, this is just conjecture, I don't know, but if he was not able to give Donna what she needed emotionally, and Charlie filled that void for the emotions, Harvey provided the money, he provided the means,
right?
But Charlie, he conditioned from an early age, and I would say it goes beyond conditioning. I say it goes to programming. I think it's a step
that's
conditioning.
Where
he is programmed to do whatever mom says, and it's all because mom loves her, and he loves mom, and they got each other's back no matter what. And it's a really tight mother-son relationship until he finds himself behind bars for the rest of his life for doing mom's bidding. And he still seems to kind of believe that this is, you know, we gotta help mom. This is my plight in life. This is my role in life. He's been programmed to believe that. And I think it really comes out in the Catherine McBotta testimony, where she was talking about, he had to go consult mom when they're having conversations about the hit. Like, let me go call mom. Let me see what she thinks about this and that. And the whole motivation when describing why he wanted this to take place, it was never about, you know, Wendy's really, she's stressed. She just hates this ex. He's making life a living hell for her. It was mom's upset. Mom can't sleep. Mom's throwing up. Mom's just so distraught that the grandkids can't be around. It wasn't about Wendy. It was all about mom's feelings. And that is Charlie's plight in life. And I don't think he saw any other way around it. As weird and obvious as it is to all of us on the outside, he was so enmeshed and they were so codependent together. I think he was completely blind to the evil of Donna Adelson.
100%. Definitely blind to it until you can actually see again.
Yeah.
I actually tried looking up and I didn't get too much more details on it. Again, other people might have it if I missed it, but I was trying to understand why Wendy got divorced in the first place. And all I saw was they didn't get along.
They didn't get along. And she even admitted on the stand the other day that it wouldn't have happened Had it not been for Wendy and Charlie and Harvey all pressuring her to get divorced because they didn't like him.
Yeah. So that then goes, because that was my theory. I was trying to look for proof of it.
It's there, yeah.
And so the whole thing continually stems around. So if everyone keeps going back, so again, when we're looking at patterns of behavior, if in every, and this is what I was looking at when I was looking at this case, if every single event throughout this family's arc, the family's arc now, keeps going back to her, keeps going back mm-hmm. to her. What does she think? What does mom believe? Everything keeps going back for approval, confirmation, whatever it is. So why would this one action be different?
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense.
And it shows that she really did try to exhaust all the options here. She tried to bribe them with $1 million.
Yep.
And then when that didn't work, it was, well, let's go after the emotional end of things. Let's go after the psychological end of things. And she literally talks about having the kids baptized. These are kids being raised as Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Danny was a Jewish man, and you know, raising them that way. And Wendy was okay with it. It was fine. It's how what they agreed to as mother and father, which is the only two that matter in the equation. Donna's opinion does not matter, but Donna seemed to think her opinion trumped everybody else. So they're being raised, you know, in the Jewish faith. Nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But Donna hated that. Donna goes
up to as a Hitler.
Donna goes all the way to suggesting dressing them up as Hitler youth and sending them a picture. What does that say about the lengths this woman is willing to go to offend, to piss off, to do what, I don't know what her goal is in that, but it ended up with Dan Markell going to a court saying, it's not appropriate for this woman to be around my children anymore. And then that seemed to be the catalyst that after that move, we were no longer talking about dressing the kids as Hitler youth or getting them baptized in the Christian faith. It was, let's find a hitman, it seemed.
Yeah, it was an arc. Tell me it's not the most obvious escalation arc of violence.
Yes.
I mean, it fits that pattern. Mm-hmm. You know, then you always throw on the conjecture hat here too. So I wonder who else, you know, dodged a bullet by this case coming to light, because if she hated someone else and she did it once, she's the likelihood of doing it again is high.
Well, what was very surprising from Wendy's testimony was that boyfriend that she had for a short period of time, right, who testified and said the weirdest phone call after they had broken up. Wendy calls and wants to know where he's going to be, what route he's traveling that day, where he's going to be at this point in time. And those specific points and times and locations all coincided with the murder, as if there was this like last minute thought of, oh, let's say it's your ex-boyfriend. He must be jealous, out to kill your ex-husband. And this, I could just see Donna having a light bulb moment, very cartoon-like, while she's sipping on boxed white Zin, going, oh, wait, this is it. We're just going to blame this boyfriend.
We got a fall guy.
He's our fall guy. It makes total sense. I saw it on Dateline once. It's always the ex. And that just
seems to be going along. Motive. Okay.
Yeah, and call him, honey. See what his plans are. And it makes you wonder, did Wendy know why she was asking him those questions? Or did Donna just say, call him and ask him these questions? I want to know.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. You know, it's interesting. Does she have a lifetime of reps of knowing how to be compliant? And that's the only thing she knows, that she does, that she from a young age just learned never to challenge what mom thought.
I'd say that's a hard yes.
Yeah. Because think about it. It's like every time, it's like everyone keeps saying, did she know? Doesn't she know? You know, well, how come she wouldn't have some curiosity? Well, if you've been bred to never be curious and never ask questions,
yep,
then is she culpable? You know, because again, so I think with Wendy, we are seeing an arc in her behavior of just not being curious when things were odd. And so, you know, I know it's 50-50 what everyone's thinking on it, but it's...
You're exactly right. She was. It's so different to us on the outside looking at. This is any case. It's like, how would you think this way in all these? Like, why would you do that?
Well, we do when you have empathy.
Yes, yes. And when you understand how this person was raised and what they're going through, what they view as normal, yep. what their prism says is accurate, they're not going to think anything different until something horrible happens and really points it out. And it feels like now they've somewhat wised up, at least a bit. Wendy still seems to be holding a bit of you know, something there. And it may just be self-preservation of, I don't want to say anything more that's going to get me in trouble. Or is she still defending Donna? I don't know the answer to that completely.
I think she's still fearful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the testimony of her brother, her older brother, mm-hmm. And again, family means a lot. So, you know, here's what we do know. Family means a lot to them all.
Yeah.
Everyone's opinion in family meant a lot and still means a lot. And then if all of a sudden you have one family member that's now being incongruent with taking care of each other, which is the mother who's not taking care of anyone anymore, it starts having that fracture. It's probably extremely sad for her as well. At the same time, she has reps of constantly supporting the mother and also fear, because the reason why, whether she's aware of it or not, our greatest motivator is fear. Yeah. And that's what you think Donna wasn't using fear as a motivator in life? And she used psychological fear, the fear of me not approving of you, the fear of me chastising you, the fear of the silent treatment I'm going to give you if you don't do what I say, you know, the fear of me saying that I no longer care about you because you know, so all these things that she said, you cannot care too much.
And the reality is, even if that person that you're fearing no longer holds the power, if that's been programmed into you, conditioned into you for the last 40 some years of your life, it's not going away. It's still there. Your body, your brain is still going to react that way. You have to be the one that breaks that open and says, it's not there anymore. And even then, that's going to take years to break down, if ever. It's such a visceral reaction because that's all you know. And that's how you can operate.
I give a lot of grace to them going through this as they're making their transition out of this, because that's not easy. I mean, you are literally having your own self-image of what you thought about the world, what you thought about yourself, what you thought about your mother being shattered and kind of redefined. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're living a lie, her lie. And so facing that in a courtroom with the entire world to see cannot be easy.
No.
At the same time, you were a bystander in some capacity of your ex-husband getting bumped off, who knows if you actually would have divorced had it not been for your mother.
Yeah. And what did you know of it? I mean, I still question what Wendy knew. Wonder if she knew something was going to happen that day, but something could mean anything. Something could mean, you know, we're going to go confront him. We're going to go, I mean, and not necessarily death, but maybe he's going to go get beat up. Maybe he's going to be pressured. We're going to do something to change his mind. So Donna gets what she wants. And I'm wondering if Wendy thought, well, they're going to do something and I'm not going to, no matter what I say, they're going to do it. But I don't think they're going to go that far. And then she finds out they went that far. I mean, she was the first to admit it in the questioning when she got pulled in that day. Do you think your family is capable of doing this? And it was like, maybe. Who, Charlie? I mean, she went right to it immediately. So I do wonder about that. But at the end of the day, even when we break down all of this with all of these people, the psychology of this whole family, what is going to matter here is what the jury thinks. And one of the biggest tells in that courtroom is not necessarily the testimony of the kids or the detectives. It's Donna Adelson. And she is supposedly going to testify. She may have already by the time you watch this. I don't know. But before we even talk about that, because we don't know if she's what that will look like, I'm sure it will be a very balanced, accurate thing that's going to clear everything up. And we're going to feel, oh, we all misunderstood that woman. Let's let her go. And let's go have an espresso after court and laugh about it. No, it's not going to end that way. What is going to happen is they're going to take that information and they're going to weigh it with her reactions. And her reactions in court have been very interesting, to say the least. We've talked about it a little bit, but what do you think the jury has been gleaning off of Donna's seemingly inability to hold back how she feels about every person that walks in front of her?
Yeah, chaos. I mean, that's a chaos brain to me. I mean, she's all over the place. To me, she struck me as someone who's trying to be what she thinks she's supposed to be and doesn't know what that's supposed to be is. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fake tears the other day, the emotional responses of things, because you don't know what's causing the emotional response. I mean, something, it just seems very incongruent with what's going on in the courtroom. All of a sudden, there's like this emotional response to something. And I was like, what's mm-hmm. that caused by? That's kind of weird. Yeah. I mean, because that's what everyone keeps saying, seeing probably from the jury's standpoint is that was weird. Mm-hmm. What I'm curious about what she does on the stand when she testifies, which is, again, it's always fun watching someone who thinks they know more than anyone else testify. I think it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, that's going to be some popcorn.
Here's where she has a very unique opportunity. I don't think there's any saving herself in this. I'll be interested to see if she tries to save her daughter.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't take her saying, I'm culpable, I knew about all this, but I'll be interested to see if she actually says, you know, I got this relationship with my kids, and to my downfall, I've always, like you said, I've always viewed my kids as my five-year-old little kids. I've just never had grown beyond that. So, you know, rightly or wrongly, I've never shared anything of my personal life with my daughter because of X, Y, and Z. In other words, it'll be interesting to see if she goes out of her way, not to defend herself, but maybe to segregate them from it. Or is she not going to? Now, me, I don't think she's going to do that. But I think her testimony is actually going to potentially double down the family coming at her.
This is the woman who put cash in the washing machine. Do you think she's capable of being out there and trying to save her daughter? Or do you think she's going to go out there and let's say that that's her intent, but she ends up incriminating her more? That seems more likely of like, I'm going to go out there. I'm not going to do anything to harm Wendy. And she just ends up saying something that totally incriminates Wendy. And then Wendy ends up behind bars. And Donna was like, I was just trying to. And, you know, well, guess who else is now serving a prison sentence? Fudd. Yeah, thanks to Elmer J. Adelson.
Yep. The mansion and the yacht.
it is a train wreck. Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program and author of this book. It's his latest one, Unbreakable Alliances. Get it wherever you buy books or audiobooks. You narrated it. It's very good. I your story time to me quite often. Anyway, check all of that out and let us know your thoughts in the comment section wherever you're watching this. If you're watching us on YouTube, press subscribe there. If you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, do press subscribe and do check us out on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You'll find us there and you can let us know your thoughts. Until next time, for all of us here, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.